Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week in more than 112 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the food crisis when we come back. Hey, if you've got a lot, 50 by 100 feet with 2,000 square foot house on it, and you've got space for 6 raised beds that contain about 2,400 square feet. It's called French intensive culture. 2,400 square feet is enough space to grow all the food that a family of 5 or 6 is going to eat in an entire year. And you can do it in the middle of a city just as well as you can out in the country. The idea that you have been trapped in the city and you can't provide for yourself and your family because of a space limitation is a fiction. You don't need extra cash to buy a tractor, a plow, or a harrow, or any other kinds of farm machinery or equipment. You know, a shovel, a rake, and a hoe is more in line with what we need for an urban French intensive culture farm. We don't need lots of acres or combines or price supports. What we need is pruners, newspaper for mulch, and open pollinated seed. Now, if you've got 2,000 square feet or a backyard big enough or a decent garden, you can feed your whole family on your own land. And we have a seed package which is designed to answer your questions with the most economical and practical solutions to your long-term food needs. It has space-saving vegetables, so you need less land, less fertilizer, less water, less mulch, and less work. And it's been designed for immediate food availability. It just takes 28 days from seed to salad. 28 days. It has flowers to attract wild pollinators because of the loss of our honeybee population to chemical sprays and disease. It's been designed with a long harvest season to allow for fresh vegetables longer and to reduce stress by not making you can, dry, or store everything all at once. You won't need any specialized tools, just a rake, a hoe, and a shovel, plus a supply of newspaper for mulch is enough to plant and raise every seed in the package, and a pair of clippers and a paring knife is all you need to harvest it. And this package is designed with all non-hybrid, non-genetically modified seeds, and it can feed a family of 6 forever, if you're sensible and you save your seeds. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. 4967. And our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the food crisis. Now, I started off by telling you that the food crisis was caused by 545 people. Truth of the matter is, it isn't even 545. It's more like about 350 of them. It just takes a majority to create that policy. But it's our Congress, our President, and our Supreme Court that makes the laws, makes the inflation. They're the people that can't solve the immigration problem. They're the people that have spent us into bankruptcy. They're the people who have created the policies that have created this food crisis. Let me give you an illustration. Back in 1920, the population of the United States was around 100 million people. And we had 44 million farmers. Nearly half, well, 44% of the people of America were producing their own food for themselves. and then they produced food for the rest of the people in the country. So 44% of the people produced all of the food that we had in this country, and plenty for export. We had all kinds of food coming out of our ear bowls. But the next step, by 1940, 20 years later, the number of farmers had decreased to 22%. So now we've got half as many farmers, more people, and half as many farmers. By 1969, that's 19 years later, the number of farmers had fallen to 6 million, or about 4%. Now the population in 1970 or 69 or 70 is around 170 million, and only 4% of our people are engaged in farming. And we adopted a program in this country. It's called agribusiness. It was after World War II. We said, hey, we're going to get after this agribusiness thing. What we want is cheap food. We want lots of cheap food. All right. Well, today, in the year 2008, we only have 1.9 million farmers. We have 2.3 million people locked up in our jails and prisons, and we got 1.9 million farmers. We got fewer farmers than we have prisoners in jail. It represents 0.006% of our population of 300 million. Now, notice, too, that our production has gone way down. See, we have moved from 44 million farmers. We have moved to 1.9 million farmers. And we used to have great surpluses to export. Now, America is a net importing nation. Did you know that? Yes, America, in the year 2007-8-9, is now at the break-even point. And in 2006, we imported more grain than we exported. First time in our history we did that. What's going on here? It's policy. We have a top-down agricultural policy. In the Soviet Union, they called it a five-year plan. In this country, we call it the Department of Agriculture, and they put out every year. They come out with an agriculture plan for our farmers, called price subsidies and so on. It's the agricultural policy of America is the same as it is in Russia, the Soviet Union, China. It's a top-down communist policy. And as a result of that, the great surpluses that we had back in the 50s have now disappeared. They're gone. That's what communism always does. It did it in Russia, did it in China, and it's now done it in the United States. We followed the same policies that they followed in China and Russia, share the shortage. And that's where we're headed. Now, the dramatic part of it is that the world now is tied together in this entire agricultural system is tied together in world commodity prices. So the price of a ton of rice in the United States is the price of a ton of rice in South Vietnam or any place else in the world. See, it used to be that the people in a certain region, let's say Southeast Asia, they produced rice over in Southeast Asia. And we don't know what the price was. It might have been 10 cents a pound. Here in the United States, it might have been 15 or 20 cents a pound. But now, every country in the world is tied into world trade. And so, they had a drought down in Australia. I reported this to you in the last program or two. They had a drought down there in Australia. They haven't got the water to grow rice, but they've got the water to grow grapes. And so, they're shifting over from rice to grapes. And so, 98% of the rice that they used to produce in Australia has now been replaced with grapes or something else. And you can rest assured that those farmers are never going to go back to producing rice because the grapes produce $2,000 an acre and the rice produces $240 an acre. And they're not going back to 240 from 2000. That isn't going to happen. And then I reported to you in the last program, I sold three big 1,200-pound steers here a couple of years ago, 3 years ago. I got 69 cents a pound. I said, that'll be the last time I ever do that. Sent them over to the sale barn, and they go up for auction, and I went for McDonald's burgers, and I said, well, I'm not going to subsidize you people in the city. So as a result of this policy created by these 545 people here in the United States, this policy, agricultural policy, this adoption of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto has now produced shortages. We're not suffering from the shortage in the United States, but because all the world is tied together now in this new world order, in this trade program, you know, around the world, free trade. A price of rice today at $600 a ton is $600 in Vietnam, $600 in India, $600 in California, $600 in New York at $600. And the price of rice, I just saw the other day, the price of basmati rice moved to $2,000 a ton. That's a specialty rice. You know, it's a little different than the cheap John white trash we buy here in the States. But to point that out, I don't know if $2,000 a ton is too much or too little. I'm just pointing out that the reason that the price of rice is going up is because we're producing less of it. So in the last program, I suggested, why don't we produce more? You know, the solution that the politicians and the aid people are telling is donate more money. And I said, wait a minute. We're not short of money. Hell, Ben Bernanke is producing money by the carload. There's no shortage of money, kids. There's a shortage of rice. We need more rice. I know that sounds kind of simplistic, but the problem is we need more of the commodity. How do we get more commodity? Well, by boosting the price to encourage the farmer to grow more of it. For instance, if a farmer was getting $2,000 an acre for growing rice, he probably wouldn't convert from rice to grapes. I mean, that's just the way life is, you know. But if he's getting $240 an acre for rice, and then he can get $2,000 an acre for grapes, it's very likely that he might convert to grapes. And once he converts to grapes, there isn't going to be any more rice production. Now, I would submit to you boys and girls, we could live a lot longer on rice than we can on wine. I just would bet that we probably could. Now, once that production is lost, it's lost. And once these farmers are lost, they're gone. They're gone. Now, it exacerbates the problem because in 1920, when 44 million American farmers were producing food for the other 56 million of us, they were producing all of their own food. So they only had to produce food for 56 million. By 1950, 10% of the population, 15 million farmers, just 10% of us, were engaged in agriculture. And we produced the food for the other 90%. Then in 1969, we were down to 4%, 6 million farmers, 4% of the population. Okay, we have driven, now get this, we have driven 42 million farmers out of business between 1920 and 2008. 42 million farmers are now out of business. It's worse than that. Because when the 42 million farmers went out of business, they became net consumers because they had to leave the farm and move to the city. They're not producing any food for themselves, and now they're placing a higher burden on the fewer and fewer that are left farming. So now you've got 2 million farmers that have to feed 300 million people. We presume that they're feeding themselves 2%, or 2 million rather. Now, the physical shortage has manifested itself worldwide because of world trade. And so I pointed out in the last program, the solution to that is that we got to produce more. Now, I mentioned to you that you can produce this on your own lot. For crying out loud. I pointed out in the last program, the Rodale people put out $28,000 off of one-third of an acre. That's the equivalent of $84,000 now. Now, we teach a class on how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less. You don't need 25 acres to make $100,000. But I'm pointing out to you that 25 acres is in the bag. I mean, you know, a lot of people have 25 acres. Hell, a lot of people have 3 acres. And the Rodale people can turn out, this is a world record. Now, you're not going to do this very likely. You're not going to turn out $84,000 on a third of an acre, but you sure as hell could turn out $84,000 on 3 acres, couldn't you? I mean, that isn't a world record. You can turn out $10,000 worth of food to feed your own family off of 2,000 square feet in downtown Cleveland, for crying out loud. And we did that in World War II. Boys and girls, let me tell you, I was there. I saw it with my eyeballs. I never lived a day of my life until about 1950 that we didn't have a one-year supply of food in our pantry, in our house. And we're not even Mormons. It is true that the Mormons are the people that get all the credit for food storage and that they're the people that put out the books and they're the people that have the food storage program. But let me tell you that they might have pioneered it, or they might have had a lot to do with it, or they might have a lot of, you know, a lot of books out there. But, you know, we and the Ronnie Mitchells and the Birchfields and the Johnsons and all the neighbors around us, they all had pantries that had a one-year supply of food in them. In fact, everybody understood back in 1940 or 45 or 50 that food comes in once a year, that the rice harvest comes in once a year, the wheat harvest comes in once a year, and that you have to use the wheat harvest, the rice harvest, the soybean harvest, the fall of the year, the harvest. You've got to gather enough to feed you for the other 11 months of the year. Did you know that? People in the city don't. Because they go to the grocery store, and the grocery store always has strawberries 12 months a year. And that's a marvel. You know, if you stop and think about it, you go into your supermarket, there isn't a single month in the year that you can't have strawberries. But strawberries are only on the vine, you know, for a few months of the year. They're out right now. It's April, May, June, July, August. There'll be fresh strawberries. And then when there's no fresh strawberries, no problem. We'll just bring them in from Australia and Chile on a 747. Hell, we can have cherries. I bought cherries in January. They were $7 a pound. $7 a pound. I bought a pound of cherries. They came from, I've forgotten now, hell, it was on the package too. I don't know, they were from some foreign country. They'd have to be. We can't have cherries and fresh cherries in Missouri in January unless they're flown in from Chile or someplace. Now, we've gotten used to that here in the United States and Canada and Australia and New Zealand and Western Europe. You know, the industrialized nations with all the money in the world, we're used to that. But now all of a sudden there's a new twist coming in. It's called world famine, and that's because we got world trade. And because the price of rice is the same in Vietnam as it is in New York City, hey, when there's a shortage of rice in Vietnam, those people are bidding the price up, and we're going to pay it in New York City. Now, here's an interesting article here. It's food rationing confronts the breadbasket of the world. Well, guess who the breadbasket of the world is? It's the United States of America. Well, at least that's what we used to be, but not anymore, because now we're a net importer of food. Let me repeat that, boys and girls. The United States of America is now a net importer. And 50% of what you're buying out of your supermarket comes from overseas. More than 50%. Now, that's a real reversal. A real reversal. Now, many parts of America, long considered the breadbasket of the world, are now confronting a once unthinkable phenomenon. It's called food rationing. And major retailers in New York, in areas of New England and on the West Coast, are limiting purchases of flour, rice, and cooking oil as demand outstrips supply. Why is the demand outstripping the supply? Well, because we've only got 2 million people producing now. And the 2 million that are producing are all big farmers. I mean, these are multinational corporations, a lot of them, like Archer Daniels Midland and Cargill And these big multinational corporations, they've got vast tracts of land, millions of acres of land that they have on the New York Stock Exchange and their big businesses and multinational corporations, and they're farming in countries all over the world, you know, like Tyson Chicken. I mean, hell, they got plants and factories around the world. It's big business. Food production is big business. But instead of having 44 million Americans producing food for the other half of us, we now have 2 million Americans producing food, and they can't produce enough for 300 million, so we have to import it now. Which is fine, but you see, the other farmers in the world, they're also moving rapidly toward industrialization of agriculture. And the industrialization is going to cause a worldwide famine of biblical proportions. I wouldn't have been able to tell you that, because I'm not in a position to know. But there is a guy that wrote this down 3,000 years ago, and he wrote it in the book of Deuteronomy. It's Deuteronomy chapter 28. Go read them and weep. And Leviticus 26 and Revelation 6. Of course, you could also tuck in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. That would give you a little bit more on this thing of famine. I didn't make it that way, and it isn't true because I say so. I'm just a reporter here telling you that these are the events that are transpiring. Now, the reason is 545 Americans created this policy beginning back in the early 1920s. And this policy has been kept up by these same 545 office holders in the United States of America. And it had a conclusion, and the conclusion is where we're at today. And we're on the cusp now of a worldwide famine. Never before in history has this been possible. Famines have always been local or regional, never worldwide. Now we have 40 countries in the world with food shortages and riots going on. And the food production is going down, down per person. Now watch what's happening here. See, every year, 100 million people are born in the world. Then 20 million of them starve to death, which leaves a net surplus of 80 million more mouths to feed. That's 80 million more mouths to feed. Now, at the same time that we've got 80 million more mouths to feed, we cut 4,000 square miles of rainforest in the Amazon jungle. At the very same time we're cutting 4,000 square miles, we are increasing the Gobi Desert and the Sahara Desert by 100 square miles per year. Now, 100 square miles, boys and girls, let me just give you a little perspective. 100 times 640, that's 6,400 acres a year, ain't it? Let's try that again. 64,000 maybe. 100 times 640. Yeah, 64,000. I put another zero in there. 64,000 acres. Now, that's in the Gobi, and then 64,000 acres in the Sahara. That's 128,000 acres a year being taken out of production. And when we cut that 4,000 square miles down in the Amazon basin, we put that into agricultural production for about 10 or 15 years, and then we wear the soil out, and then we have to abandon it. This is called slash and burn agriculture. And the ultimate end to this is we have less and less acres to feed more and more people with less and less output. Less and less output. And that's because the industrial model that we've created now produces less per acre. That one farmer can farm more acres and produce more per man, but he's producing less total tons of food. So the net result is this. Every year they keep telling us, well, wheat production went up 3% this year. Well, okay, that's wonderful. Rice production went up 3% this year. It goes up 1%, it goes up 2%, sometimes 3% a year. But what they're not telling you is that the population went up by 6% this year, which is a net loss. We all have to share the shortage. Can you follow that? Now, if you got 80 million new mouths to feed every year and you got 6,500, So let's take, I'm going to have to do a little arithmetic here without taking off my shoes here. 6,500,000,000 people. 6,500. I'll have to knock off some zeros here. Just bear with me now for a second. I think I can give you the number. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There it is. All right, so I got 6,500,000,000. I got 80,000,000, so I'll put 80 up here, and then let's take off 0,000,000, and we'll just knock that off. Oh, it's 80 divided by 6,500. 80 divided by 6,500. Excuse me. 6,500, and that gives us 0.12%. Is that correct? 80 is what percentage of 6,500? 0.12. That's it. So the population is growing by 1.2% net per year. And then we lose 2,800. Is it 2,800? No, it was 128,000 acres. 128,000 acres. And we had a thing here back in the 70s called the Green Revolution. God, that was a nice one. That made us all feel real good because we were producing more and more food. And we went from 72 days down to 38 days. And then we went up. In fact, I just saw some numbers the other day. I think the world today has a 12-week supply. 7 times 12 is how much? 14. That's an 84-day supply. Right now, today, we're up to 84 days. So our Green Revolution produced more food, and we went up. Now, remember, I told you back in World War II, all of us Americans that I knew anything about had a year's supply in our pantries all the time. Always kept a year's supply. And then, all of a sudden, we're down to a three-day supply. The average American today, last numbers I saw, we have a three-day supply in our refrigerator. And then FEMA, that's a 72-hour supply. FEMA's going to come in and save us like they did in New Orleans. Now, start putting this together, kids. Start putting it together. As you add this 80 million cumulatively every year, that's 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, 80, here's these new mouths that have to be fed every year on less and less land. And with the industrial model, we keep getting cheaper and cheaper food produced by fewer and fewer farmers. And still, now, instead of having millions of farmers producing food for themselves and for us, we have these millions of farmers now moving to the cities. And now they have to be fed. Farmers who used to feed themselves and others now have to be fed, compounding the problem. So that the fewer and fewer farmers, and the trend is going from bad to worse. I mean, we're not producing more farmers every year as a percentage of the total number of people in the world. We're having and producing fewer and fewer farmers. And that's because these 545 people, through agricultural policy, cheap food policy, are driving these farmers into bankruptcy and off the farm. Many times people call me on the telephone and say, "Well, Mr. Gordon, I heard you talking on the radio about your farm, and I want you to know that I was raised on a farm. I was raised on whole milk and raw milk." I say, "Well, that's good. Well, where do you live now?" "I live in Atlanta, Georgia." "Oh, what do you do?" "I'm a computer programmer." Oh yeah, my dad left the farm in the 1970s, or he left the farm in the 1980s. "Well, why did he leave the farm?" "Well, because he was driven out of business. He can't compete." I told you the last program, I took 3 steers over and got 69 cents a pound. I got about 600 and some change. I got about half what I had invested in them. So when I sold them to you people, you bought them in McDonald's. That gave you those cheap $1.39 hamburgers. That's fine, but I won't do that anymore. I got a little different marketing strategy. And the rice farmers down in Australia, they got a different marketing strategy. They're going to grow grapes. They're not going to grow rice. Now, just start multiplying that out, boys and girls, and that's what's happening. We're exporting our industries in the United States, but we're also exporting our agricultural industry to overseas. Here's one more for you. Gilroy, California. It used to be called the garlic capital of the United States. And they produced about $200 million a year. It's, you know, garlic's a small industry. It never was anything like wheat or something else. But they produced $200 million a year in garlic. Today they're producing near nothing. And that's because the garlic industry was exported to China because the Chinese can produce it for $3.65 a pound and cost $16 here in America. You people didn't want to spend $16 a pound for garlic. You wanted to spend $3.65 and buy Chinese garlic. Now your industry is gone. Whoops. You wait until we don't pay those Chinese and they cut off your garlic supply and you won't have garlic. Now, not only is it happening to shoes and televisions and automobiles and everything else, it's also happening to food. And that's why I said we're on the cusp of a worldwide famine. Now, at a Costco warehouse in Mountain View, California yesterday, shoppers grew frustrated and occasionally uttered expletives as they searched in vain for the large sacks of rice that they usually buy. Where's the rice? An engineer from Palo Alto, California. His name is Ya-Jun Leo said. You should be able to buy something like rice. This is ridiculous. Well, excuse me, partner. Why don't you grow your own rice? You see, all of us got onto the bandwagon. We said, let's leave the farm and move to the city where we can get big wages. Got it worked like a shot. This industrialization of agriculture worked like a shot for a long time. I mentioned it to you last time. I said, look, you got a pocket full of credit cards and you go out and you got $1,000 a month to spend, but you spend $1,100. You pay $1,000, you go $100 in debt. You do this every month. It's $1,200 a year. It's no big deal until 12 years later you find out you're bankrupt. And that's what's happened with farming. You know, we had 44 million farmers. Little by little, those farmers were forced off the land by the cheap food policy from our Congress, our President, and our Supreme Court. Until now, we're down to 1.9 million farmers. Excuse me, Mr. Ya-Jun Leo. Excuse me. It may be ridiculous, but 1.9 million farmers, 0.006 farmers, can't produce enough for you anymore. Ya-Jun? Just physically can't do it no more. So I pointed this out. Victory Gardens. This one lady came up with Victory Gardens. She is an old lady. She can remember World War II. So, oh my God. I remember we used to produce our own. Yep. Wake up here. Let's connect some dots here, kids. Because you're spending $9,600 a year in your supermarket. And it's going to be more. Here in America, we only spend 20% of our budget on food. Around the world, they spend 80%, 50%, 60%. The other day, I told you a story here. I just read it off one of these articles. This guy's making $4.50 a day in the Philippines. And the price of rice doubled. Now, he spends half of his money, $2.25. I think it was 50%. $2.25 he spends on food. The price of rice doubles. Doubles. In 90 days. The rice is their main staple. All of a sudden, this guy can no longer eat breakfast because now it takes 100% of his $4.50 a day just to buy the food that he was buying 90 days ago for half price. You see, boys and girls, the guys that are going to die first are the poor people around the world. They're going to be dying by their millions shortly. And it's going to drive the price of food up because every dollar that those guys have in their pockets are going to spend on food. I mean, when your stomach's empty, he's going to spend his whole $4.50 now on food. He's going to pay any rent. He's going to be out in the street, but he's going to spend it all on food. That's going to drive the price up. And that's not going to put more farmers back out on the land, which is what my suggestion is. I said, hey, wait a minute, kids, we don't need more money. What we need, what we've got to have here, we've got to have more food, more rice. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.com. www.georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian, non-commercial law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the website as well. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, opinions, or beliefs of the advertiser, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and the Law Editorial Review or the Law School, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the food crisis around the world and the fact that there's no better business to be in than food in a famine. And we teach two classes here. One is on subsistence and survival. The other on how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. As a matter of fact, you can make $100,000 a year in today's dollar. Today's inflated dollars on 2 or 3 acres. And the Rodale people did it on $84,000 on one-third of an acre back in the 1970s. Adjusted for inflation, that'd be about $84,000. They did $28,000 back in the 70s. Now, if you'll go to our website, you'll see on our website the schedule, like $100,000 increase on 25 acres. We'll be teaching that class August 18th through the 29th. Subsistence and survival, September 8th through the 19th. And a food preservation or a food storage program will be a regular, no hands-on, $100,000. Be the 13th to the 17th of October. That's October the 13th to the 17th. And the 20th to the 24th of October, subsistence and survival. Now, we typically do these classes twice a year. Or if you want more information, just call the law school and ask us, and we'll tell you more, and we'll lay it out for you in spades. And the reason that I point this out is because people called here at the law school, oh, my God, Mr. Gordon, I've lost my job. Yeah, yeah. Unemployment in the United States is running 12%. The liars in Washington, those 545 politicians, tell you it's 5%, but they lie a lot. They tell you inflation's around 4.5%. They're lying. Inflation's 12%. It's 15 right now. It's been running 12. It's up to 15. And it's headed up toward 18%. That's where the M3 money supply is right now. 18%. Now, the numbers that we're getting out of the government over here are lies. As old Mark Twain used to say, damn lies. And here's this guy in Palo Alto, California. He says, oh my God, this is ridiculous that we should have rice shortages. No, it isn't ridiculous at all. It's the culmination of policy that's been going on in this country since 1920. It's just that now the chickens are home, they're on the roost. That's what the bottom line is. The bustling store in the heart of Silicon Valley usually sells 4 or 5 varieties of rice to a clientele largely of Asian immigrants, but only about half a pallet of Indian-grown basmati rice was left in stock, and a 20-pound bag was selling for $15.99. You can't eat this every day. It's too heavy. A healthcare executive from Palo Alto, his name is Shared Patel, grumbled as his son loaded 2 sacks of the basmati into a shopping cart. We only need 1 bag, but I'm getting 2 in case a neighbor or friend needs it, the older man said. All right, now let me show you a little something else here. Whenever you have a shortage, you exacerbate the shortage by telling us that we've got a shortage. Johnny Carson did that. Back in the 70s sometime, he was telling some jokes, and he said, there's a shortage of toilet paper. And as soon as somebody finds out there's a shortage, well, then they say to themselves psychologically, say, well, oh my God, I better go out and buy some or I might run out. Now, the truth of the matter is there wasn't any shortage, but by the time about 3 days had gone by, and, you know, millions of people listened to Johnny Carson. And so millions of people went out into the supermarkets and all bought twice as much toilet paper, which did, in fact, produce a temporary shortage. John Grambush did that one time. He called me on the phone. He said he put out a buy order for 100 bags of silver. And at that time, I don't know what they were selling for, $5,000-$6,000 a bag. So in the United States of America, 100 bags of silver, this was the National Commodity and Barter Association, drove the price of silver up by $1.50 overnight. $1.50 an ounce overnight. Why? There was a perceived shortage. All of a sudden, a bunch of brokers go out in the marketplace and they say, we need 100 bags of silver. And the normal sale of the bags of silver in a day maybe was 100 bags of silver a day. All of a sudden, now there's a demand out here for an extra 100 bags. That's twice as much. There's half as much supply in the pipeline. Psychologically, it says, oh my God, there's a shortage of silver. And so they start bidding the price up. That's what's happened to rice. Truth of the matter is, there isn't any physical shortage of rice worldwide. Truth is, there isn't any physical shortage of wheat. In fact, there's a 12-week supply. But 12 weeks is not very much. We should all have a one-year supply. Let me give you a little demonstration of how this works. Over the years, I accumulated 200 cans of coffee. Those 39-ounce cans, 200 of them. Now, we use about one can of coffee per month here in our household. One can per month. That's 12 a year. So if you got 200 divided by 12, that's a 16.66-year supply. So I'm sitting on a 16-year supply of coffee. 16 years. Some guy says, you're hoarding coffee. So what? What the hell difference does it make to you whether I've got one can of coffee on the shelf or I've got 200 cans? Let me ask you this. What the hell business is it of yours how many cans of coffee I got on the shelf? Is there any reason why you don't have 200 cans of coffee on the shelf? And some guy says, well, I'm not a hoarder. Well, didn't you take a Princess Cruise last year? Didn't you go out and buy a new car, you damn hoarders? I didn't buy a new car last year. I'm still driving my old one. You hoarder? You took a Princess Cruise last year. I didn't. What are you doing? Hoarding automobiles? Hoarding Princess Cruises? You know, the marketplace is out there for people to buy, sell, and trade in. You want to buy a new car? Okay. Hell, here in America, it's common for people to have three cars. I guess we're a nation of hoarders. I don't know how many cars are enough for you. Maybe you want six or eight. I got a friend of mine. He's got 20. 20? 20 cars? What the hell can he do with 20 cars? He can't drive 20 cars a day. He collects Cadillacs. He's a car buff, you know. He's a nut. He's a car hoarder is what he is. He hoards old cars like 19. He has a 1957 Cadillac Eldorado. I don't have a 1957 Cadillac Eldorado. And then on top of that, he's got 19 more Cadillacs. He collects Cadillacs. I collect coffee. 16-year supply. I don't know how many years supply 20 Cadillacs is, but it's more than a 16-year supply of Cadillacs. All right, so I've got these 200 cans of coffee. Well, some years back, and I bought these cans of coffee when they were $4.50 a can. And I'd go into the store, and I'd see them at $4.50, so I'd buy a case. I didn't buy one can, I bought a case. And there's eight cans of coffee to a case. And so I'd buy a case of coffee. And you know, you go in there, you know, once a week. It doesn't take you long to build up 200 cans. I put them up on the shelf. You know, I got a pantry, and I put them up on the shelf. Well, one day, the price of coffee spiked and went up to $6 or $7 a can. And God, you should have heard the people complain. Oh my God, the price! And you know what the excuse was? They said there was a frost in Colombia, and Juan Valdez couldn't pick coffee because the coffee crop was ruined. And I thought, is Colombia the only country in the world that produces coffee? Don't they also produce coffee in Brazil? Did they have a frost in Brazil too? How about Venezuela? Does it got any coffee beans in Venezuela? It's right next door to Colombia, same latitude. How about British Guiana? You know, how about Central America? How about Mexico? Don't they grow coffee there too? How about Indonesia and India and China? Don't they grow coffee around the world? Nah, it's just price fixing is what it boils down to, and I'm not here to criticize them. I mean, hell, I'm sitting on 200 cans of coffee, and so all of a sudden, the price of coffee spikes to $7 a can. I guess somebody's going to say, well, Gordon, you're the cause of it. You know, you had 200 cans of coffee. If you hadn't had those 200 cans of coffee, the price wouldn't have spiked. There'd have been enough coffee out there for millions of people. Ah, come on. Grow up, would you? Wake up. Connect the dots. Now, there's no shortage of coffee today. There's a shortage of rice. I could see you calling me a hoarder if I went down to the local store and I started stocking up on rice like this guy did here. Now, he wanted some other variety of rice. There wasn't any other available, so he bought basmati. He didn't even like the basmati rice, but he bought two. He bought two because that's all they had. He only wanted one, but he bought two because there was a shortage. So when you have a shortage, it exacerbates the shortage by telling us that there's a shortage. As soon as we find out there's a shortage, oh my God, I got to go out and rush out and buy rice. Boys and girls, the time to have been buying rice was years ago when there wasn't any shortage. All right, so I stopped buying coffee. I had 200 cans. There wasn't any need for me to pay $7 a can for coffee. I had a 16-year supply. Let's try it this way. Let's suppose that all you people out there in Radio Land had bought 200 cans of coffee like I did. Hell, there wasn't any shortage of coffee when I bought it. I think you could have bought 200 cans of coffee if you'd have wanted to. Instead of taking that Princess Cruise, let's see, 200 cans of coffee at $4.50 a can, $4.50 times 200 cans. It was $900. I don't know. Can you take a Princess Cruise on $900? You spent your $900 on a Princess Cruise. I spent my $900 on coffee. Some other guy spent his $900 making car payments. The hell is it to you what I spend my $900 on? I want coffee. Well, as it turns out, while you people are paying twice as much for coffee, I'm not paying any more for coffee because I'm still eating off of my $4.50 coffee. And then sure enough, after a while, the price of coffee went back down to $4.50, $5, and then I go back into the coffee buying business. Now, I don't buy very much coffee. I don't need it. I got a big supply, and I just kind of eat off of my coffee. I bought it years ago. And I'll tell you what. I feel more comfortable in life having 200 cans of coffee on the shelf than I do spending my money on a Princess Cruise, having one can of coffee on the shelf, and then waking up someday and some guy says, oh my God, do you know what the price of coffee is? It's $30 a can and there's none available. I don't know. It's up to you, you know. There's a food shortage coming around the world. Today, coffee's not in short supply, but rice is. Wheat's gone up to $26 a bushel. Listen, wheat and rice today, at today's prices, whatever they are, is dirt cheap. And I want to tell you why it's dirt cheap. There's a famine mentioned here in the Bible. It's in 1st or 2nd Kings. I think it's 2nd Kings chapter 6. Let me see if I can find that quickly here. 2nd Kings chapter 6. Let me read you a little story. It came to pass after this that Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, gathered all the host and went up and besieged Samaria. And there was a great famine in Samaria, and behold, they besieged it, until an ass's head was sold for 40 pieces of silver, and the fourth part of a cab of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver. Now, I don't know what a cab weighs, but 25% of a cab, let's call it a pound, a quarter of a pound of dove dung. For you people that don't know what dung is, it's SH. It's manure. Well, it sold for 5 pieces of silver. Now, a piece of silver is 2/3 of an ounce. No, that's a shekel. I don't know what a piece is. A shekel was 2/3 of an ounce. We'll call this 2/3 of an ounce. No, let's just call it an ounce, because I don't know what the piece is. Today, when we pick up a piece of silver, it's an ounce. So we'll just round it off to an ounce. Now, notice that this is 80 pieces, 40. A score is 20, so 80 pieces. That's 80 ounces. And today, silver is running around $16, so it's times 16. That's $1,280. $1,280. Write that down so you can report that to your wife tonight at dinner. Listen, that's $1,280. What did this lady get for $1,280? She got a donkey head. She got the head of a donkey. No, she didn't get the back strap. She didn't get the filet mignon. No, she didn't get the donkey ribs so that we can put some KC barbecue sauce on them. No. She got the donkey head. No, that includes the tongue, so you can have donkey tongue. You got the cheeks and jowls. You can probably split the head open and get the donkey brains out. How much meat do you think is on a donkey head for 1,280 pounds? Well, my guesstimate would be that with the bone in, hide and all, a donkey head wouldn't weigh 20 pounds. I don't think the whole thing weighs 20 pounds. So let's divide 1,280 by 20. My God, that's $64 a pound. That's $64 a pound. And that's gross. That's not net meat weight, that's just gross, bone in. I tell you, boys and girls, a bushel of wheat is 60 pounds. I'd rather have 60 pounds of wheat for $26 than I would to have a donkey head for $64 a pound. $1,280. All right. So I'm telling you, the rice is dirt cheap, the wheat is dirt cheap, food is dirt cheap. Take advantage of it while you can, because rationing is coming. We had rationing in World War II. You're going to have rationing again. And when rationing is imposed, you will have more and more shortages. Rationing is not the solution. Rationing is the problem. But politicians, they have to respond, and they will. The politicians will respond. You people are going to complain about prices, and so the politicians will come out and say, well, you're hoarders, you know. They'll have anti-hoarding laws. Hey, you guys over here are charging too much. You're price gouging. Say, well, okay. I don't want a price gouge. I'll take my steers down in the field and shoot them and let them rot before I sell them to you people for 69 cents. Now, that's my take on it. So I'd suggest now that you stock up on meat while you got an opportunity. Now, the Patels seemed headed for disappointment, as most Costco members were being allowed to buy only one bag. Moments later, a clerk dropped two sacks back on the stack after taking them from another customer who tried to exceed the one bag cap. So let's have some rationing in here. All right, so what'll happen, the guy will go into Costco and he'll buy one bag. Then he'll go over to Safeway and he'll buy one bag. Then he'll go over to another store and he'll buy one bag. This guy wouldn't have been out buying any more than one bag to start with until there was a shortage, until there was rationing, for crying out loud. The rationing, all that does is empty the shelves. Ben Bernanke says, we'll print more money. Good, print more money. Let me show you how that one works. You people out there don't have enough money, do you? So what we need in America is more money. So the government said, to stimulate the economy, we're going to send all you good people out there $600. Well, my God, if $600 is good, wouldn't $1,200 be twice as good? Wouldn't $2,400 be four times as good? Wouldn't $4,800 be eight times as good? Hell, let's really solve the money problem in America. Let's send everybody in America, 300 million Americans, $1 million, so that everybody in America is instantaneously a millionaire. God, that ought to solve everybody's monetary problems. Now, what happens tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock? Well, you ain't going to get up and go to work because now you're a millionaire. So, now with our $1 million, let's go down to the mall and spend it. You and 300 million other Americans all descend upon the malls of America with your $1 million, your checkbooks in your hand, and how long do you think that the stores are going to have anything on the shelves? Well, you people are going to clear the shelves off in the first hour. If you want to know right now today, without sending you your $600, your $1,200, your $2,400, or your million, if everybody in America took the money they've got in their pockets and went down and bought the stuff off the shelves, you could only get 2%. 2%! And that's with the money in circulation. And now these crazy lunatics, these 545 dreamers in the Congress, along with the President and the Supreme Court, they're going to send you $600 to stimulate the economy? Well, I tell you, boys and girls, these people aren't dumb. These policies, these silly, asinine policies, these crazy, upside-down ideas that are coming out of our Congress, our President, That's a well-thought-out plan to destroy the dollar, to destroy you financially and economically, to destroy American agriculture, to destroy American industry. And it's worked like a shot. American agriculture is decimated. American agriculture is destroyed. We went from 44 million farmers to 2. We lost 42 million farmers. And now you're wondering why you got food shortages? You know, our gross national product back in 1960 was composed of 60-some percent industrial goods. Today it's less than 9. We went from 63% to 9% from 1960 to 2008. In about 50 years, we have destroyed our industrial base. And you wonder why you're unemployed? You wonder why you're flipping burgers? Now, those people in the Congress, that president that you got sitting there in the White House, those are not dumb people. Those are very intelligent people. And they have created every problem that we have. And they did it with premeditated forethought. They did it with intent. There's a goal. There's a purpose behind it. And it's called one world government. That's why I said, no, I don't think we need more money. I think we need more rice. I think we need to get off our dead ass and go to work. I know that's a wild new concept. All right, meanwhile, back on the farm here, I got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Remember, the law school is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Here, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.